3, hit it!
Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is addicted to success, and the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in any area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. And as a sort of a way of setting the table, as we always do, I want to talk a little bit about the chemistry of success and happiness and the kinds of things that we talk about the show, because there is an actual chemistry to it. But I also want to talk about really the, you know, Charlie Sheen. Let's start with Charlie Sheen. Okay. I read a quote recently about Charlie Sheen, where he said, the only thing I'm addicted to at the moment is winning. Now, I'm going to assume he was joking, but in some ways, I think that's actually not a bad description of the experience of a lot of us who get caught up in continually striving to get better, to improve, for success. We think of that as, well, that's a good thing. That's good. That's much better than just being settling. But there is an addictive quality to it, isn't there? If you think about goals, right? Goals, that's emerged into our culture, and we think of it as being to do with success. But it really, the metaphor that goals comes from as a notion is the metaphor of life as sport. So in the sport of life or business or whatever arena we're playing in, the more goals we score, in other words, the more goals we reach, the better we seem to be doing. And that, you know, like I say, God, that's almost a motivating metaphor. And what I mean by saying almost a motivating metaphor is if we're driven by a desire to win or by the fear of losing, well, we might do more to reach our goals, to score a goal, than we would otherwise do. But think about it. When you think in terms of success, succeeding or failing at life, do you get more or less stress? And I'm going to guess you get more. You know, do you feel like that thinking about life in terms of success and failure leads to more or less competitiveness? And I'm going to say it leads to excess competitiveness. Does it lead to more or less selfishness, more or less of a world where life is all about you? And I'm going to say that it leads to more of a world where life is all about you, which is not really the best world that any of us could be living in. And there is a biology to chasing success. I talk about it in my book, Feel Happy Now. Dopamine is a motivation chemical. So we've got this thing called dopamine, and when it gets released into our bloodstream, it increases our ability to focus, and it motivates us to take action. And when you're moving towards a goal, your dopamine levels naturally go up. And when you begin to anticipate a result, like, ooh, I think it's coming, I think it's coming, I think it's coming, then your dopamine levels go up. And they tend to be at their highest when you're actively pursuing getting what you want. So that's one of the chemicals. That's one of the things going on inside you when you chase a goal. Now, there's this other chemical that you've probably heard of, serotonin, which is the feel-good chemical. And that's calming and soothing. So dopamine is energizing. Serotonin is calming and soothing. And dopamine helps produce effort, and serotonin provides the reward. So we get this shot of serotonin, or at least an increase in serotonin, whenever we win anything. So if we win a game, whether it's tic-tac-toe or the lottery, or we reach a goal, you know, we get this satisfaction. Ooh, I did it. We get a serotonin hit whenever we get public recognition for a job well done. There are certain drugs, and alcohol being one of them, that can give you an increase in serotonin. They sometimes say that cocaine is the drug of high achievers because it mimics the dopamine serotonin effect. And so when somebody takes a hit of cocaine, it actually produces a mini version of that sense of having achieved a goal, which makes sense of why it's quite addictive. We get an increase in serotonin when we feel part of a crowd or a group or a team or a community at a football match, at a book club, at your church, that's one of the reasons that we like that, is because we get this hit of serotonin in those contexts. And by the way, you want to get in, I will get to the phones. I'm just kind of rambling. 866-254-1579 is the toll-free number in the United States and Canada. And from outside the U.S., you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. You might need to dial 001 first. But the way that dopamine and serotonin work together makes the world go round. You get higher levels of dopamine to move you forward, and you get higher levels of serotonin, which give you these feelings of safety and satisfaction and curiosity that most of us crave. And if you look at it through the chemical filter, you can understand why we might get addicted to success. And at least you can understand the appeal of goal-driven behavior. And now when I say goal-driven behavior, that might just be trying to solve a crossword puzzle. You know, it might be trying to change the world, because you not only get the energized focus sensations from the buildup of dopamine in trying to solve the puzzle or reach the goal, you also get the calm, contented feelings of satisfaction and well-being that follow the release of serotonin at the moment of triumph and success. Now, in the second half of the show, I'm going to talk more about how you can continue to move forward in the direction of creating what you want in your life without getting caught up in this success addiction. But in the meantime, let's go to the phones. Let's begin with Teresa in San Francisco. Teresa, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Oh, my God, I'm so excited. I can't believe it.
Yay!
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is this. I feel like my success a lot has to do with me having difficulty setting boundaries. This has played out in my jobs. It's played out in my life. I would really love to hear your advice on how I can better set boundaries. What happens is I tend to attract either bullies in my life, or I recognize them, and I just turn to jello in front of them. And I would like to learn how to better defend myself and still stay true to my integrity.
So let me ask you for an example of a specific situation where you think a stronger boundary would have been a difference maker.
I'm not sure.
Because I'll tell you why I asked, Teresa. Because normally, when somebody talks about getting better at defending themselves, I know that they're already kind of screwed. And what I mean by that is you've got to somehow feel like you're under attack in order to want to get better at defending.
Correct.
And I'm not saying that we're never under attack. I just know in my experience that most of the time when people feel under attack, they're not really. It's just the way they're perceiving it. So that's why I'm looking for it. If you do have a specific example.
Well, I have a brother who has a narcissistic personality disorder, and he's used, when my mother passed away, he used that as an opportunity to have legal abuse, and has kept me in the courts for 4 years. Just keeps claiming false claims, and he keeps losing, but I keep having to go to court.
Mm-hmm. So what would be the boundary? So okay, that sounds like a genuinely awkward situation, but where would the boundary be that would stop him from doing that? You know, short of like having him handcuffed and thrown in the back of a van and beat up and threatened, which I'm not suggesting, but I'm like, well, I'm sure you have, but, you know, that doesn't sound like a boundary issue. That sounds like, man, how annoying is this?
Well, I've done that with jobs, too, where I know this is a judgment, but I've...
You've taken jobs, gotten them beat up, bound and handcuffed, and thrown them in the back of a van?
No, seeming like, you know, the person that I kind of know is faking their way through, and they kind of sense that I know it already.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels like persecution, where they just come at me, and I'm wondering how I could better protect myself.
Well, here's what's difficult, Teresa, and also where the solution is. It's virtually impossible to solve a non-existent problem. And what I mean by that is I don't know how to create some context where you're going to be able to defend yourself against anything that might come your way in the past or the future. I mean, if you want to look at the specific situation around your brother, well, maybe there is something you can do there. If you were still at that work situation, well, there might be something you could do with that. because those are real problems. In other words, those are problems. One of the ways you know they're a real problem is that they'll have a real solution, whether we know what it is or not. Do you see the difference between the two?
Well, I'm still involved with both of them.
Oh, okay, great. So in terms of the work situation, can we start with that one?
Yes.
Okay, so what is it that if you were very clear and strong in yourself, what would you do in that situation that you're not doing now?
I don't know, because they came in and in my work, what they did was they came in one day and just fired me. And then I was like, okay, moving on, because I think spectacular things have been coming into my life. And then the next thing I know, I just got a letter yesterday that they're appealing my unemployment. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, now I have to go to court again, you know?
Okay. Well, and again, I want to make a distinction between, I get that that's annoying, but that doesn't strike me that that's to do with you having a boundary issue.
Well, I just don't know why I keep finding myself in these situations where, you know, what happens is my emotions go, Jesus, why don't they just leave me alone, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, what is the deal? Like, just move on, and there it is again.
Generally speaking, and I've got to speak generally because obviously I don't know you, and we're unlikely to get to know each other too intimately in the next 4 minutes. But I can talk about stuff that may be relevant to this kind of situation, because it isn't unique to you. I once had these somebody who's now a celebrity and their business manager, and they had just moved to Hollywood, and they asked me for an emergency meeting. I don't normally do like emergency coaching, but they asked for one, and I thought they were kind of cool. So I said, yeah. So they came out to my office and they told me stories that were not unlike yours in terms of lawsuits and broken promises and, you know, people saying one thing and doing another and thinking they had a deal and then it getting pulled out from under them and all those kinds of things. And they went on for about half an hour with that. And they built up to their big thing at the end is, you know, what is it that we're doing to attract these sharks to us?
Correct.
Right. And what I told them is, you're swimming in a shark tank. And funnily enough, that was all they needed to hear. Because once they got it wasn't personal, it wasn't some weird metaphysical thing that they were doing wrong. They were just playing in an arena where that's the kind of game that people play.
Well, that's what my husband said. He said there's infinite and finite games, and you're an infinite player in a finite world.
You know, and part of the game of that is putting up with some crap that, yeah, it'd be great if you didn't have to, but if you don't take it too personally, it's not that hard to deal with. As you say, you keep winning the court cases.
Yeah, but it's grueling.
Well, see, but now why is it grueling?
The amount of hours. I have almost 4,000 hours into it.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I've got over 4,000 hours into reading detective fiction. But I can't say I found that grueling.
Right.
So what is it about court that for you experience it as gruel?
I find it very disruptive because the intention behind it, when my mother passed away, they said, let's get her.
Right. So here's the best I can give you, given the context of this conversation, which is, you know, you're calling into a radio show.
Right.
I can't speak to whether or not that was their intention or not. And, you know, you I'm sure can make a compelling case to me that it is. But what I do know is if I focus on the bit of the situation that makes me feel bad, I'm going to feel bad. If I focus on the bit of the situation that I've got some control over, I'm going to control it. And whether you're right or you're wrong about their intention, I'm not aware, and maybe you can tell me, I'm not aware of any benefit of focusing on it.
Well, the benefit for me is that I've grown exponentially.
Okay, so you're using it like a gym.
Well, I feel like as my daughter was making a catapult one day, and she said, look, Mom, the heavier the weight, the further the object flies.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, this heavy weight has come in so that I could grow.
Well, and then the question becomes, just because you get stronger when you work out in a gym, do you want to spend that much time in the gym?
No.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm gonna have to leave it with this, but hopefully just take this away and sit with it, because I think you'll hear it. I get the sense that you are actually going to hear this. The thing that makes it a workout instead of a breeze is that you're treating it like a workout. You are actually choosing to see it as this thing to overcome. So it's making you stronger, but it's also tiring you out. And if you choose different and you just deal with it as like you might deal with a mosquito, then it will be no more exhausting than having a mosquito in the room. And I'm going to ask you, here's what I'm going to ask you. I want you to sit with that, but I do want you to phone back into the show after you've sat with it for a bit. And just let me know what came from it.
So
will you do that?
Just make it smaller.
Well, or actually what I'm saying is stop making it bigger.
Just a task to get done.
Mm-hmm. Just another thing on the list for that day. See, the 3:30, I'm getting my hair done. 4 o'clock, I'm in court. 5 o'clock, I've got tea with my friend. And then 6 o'clock, I've got to get groceries.
So you don't think it's a boundary issue?
I haven't heard a boundary issue yet.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate it, and I love the work you do. Have a spectacular day.
Thank you, Teresa. You're very welcome. You know, it's very often that where we think our problem is isn't the problem, and that's why we have so much trouble solving it. If we've defined the problem wrong, then of course we can't solve it. There's an old medical maxim that I love, which is if you hear hoofbeats, look for horses, not zebras. And we are so good at attributing really complex motives and reasons to things, when sometimes they're just really straightforward. As Freud said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Let's go to Concord, California, and talk to Deirdre. Deirdre, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
After listening to your last call, I think I'm a little confused on what I'm calling about. But in short, my story is that 5 or 6 years ago, I made big changes in my life, and my story is that not one thing that I reached for did I get.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I'm trying to change that and create another story and not get all collapsed in that, because literally I've lost everything except friends, which is a big thing for me to have, because you know, I have good friends and I'm a good friend myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to create another story for myself, but I realize that the weight of that belief is really holding me back. And I don't know how to release it. I keep trying to feel bad about the situation and not feel bad about me, but it is a huge struggle.
So, yeah, let's talk about that, because that's an interesting goal. It's like, my goal is to feel bad about the situation. I mean, I get what you mean. Don't get me wrong. But that's like, what a crap goal.
It is.
Let's look a little deeper, can we?
Okay.
One of the things about stories is it's just what we do. Mm-hmm. We're storytellers, mm-hmm. right? We make up stories about everything. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that we're going to live in our story, mm-hmm. of course, we're better off making up a better story. In my experience of life, becoming the best storyteller in the world is still a really poor substitute for connecting to that aspect of life that's beyond the stories.
Okay.
So I don't really, I mean, look, I'm sure we could have some fun with making up a better story. Maybe we even will in the next few minutes. But the truth is, there is a part of you that has been untouched by what's happened.
Ooh, okay.
And is untouched by the stories, though it does get obscured by them. It gets buried under the stories a little bit. And it's that part of you that some people would say was here before you were born. I don't know that for a fact.
Okay.
but certainly it's been here since you were born. It's that part of you that would be the same no matter where you had grown up.
Okay.
It's that deeper essence of you. And the more connected you can get with that, the less it matters what story you happen to make up. Because the thing about stories is they tend to change with our mood. If we're in a better mood, we make up a better story. Then we get into a worse mood and we make up a worse story.
That's true.
Nothing changes, really. It's just we feel better about it or worse about it. So do you have a sense of what I'm talking about when I talk about that?
I have a sense that you're right, but I don't, you know, that's kind of like where I stop. I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but I do have a sense that that is it.
And you know, maybe to be honest, I don't know exactly what I'm talking about either. I know what I'm pointing towards. Okay. And what I'm pointing towards is that there is a deeper truth to being a human being. And it's something to do with the fact that we're alive. Like, you think about life one way and I think about life another way. And in the differences in our thinking, we have different lives. But we're both alive in the same way. We're both a part of that life force, of the energy of life in the same way.
Okay.
We both have the same capacity to experience life. And the difference in our lives, we can say the difference in lives is circumstances, and at one level that's true. But beyond that, the difference in our lives is our thinking. And if I hypnotized you and just suddenly took out all the old thoughts and put in new ones, There's a huge part of you that would have a very different experience of life, but the experiencer wouldn't have changed at all. Does that, again, I'm getting kind of deep here, but tell me if you're still with me.
I'm still with you. I'm still with you. I'm still looking.
Okay. So what I've found is that particularly when you look outside, when you look in the direction of, you know, either what happened or as you're looking at the story of what happened, All you're doing is swapping out one movie for another. You're swapping out one piece of software for another piece of software. But what isn't changing and what doesn't change is the hardware and the firmware, is the essence of who you are, of who any of us are as human beings. We're alive, we're aware, and we think. And there is absolutely no problem possible in our aliveness. I mean, at some point we die, but that's it. And there is absolutely no problem with our capacity for awareness. It's like a pure light that casts shadow. The light doesn't have any problems. Sometimes if you put something scary in front of it, it makes a scary shadow. And if you put something funny in front of it, it makes a funny shadow. But the light doesn't change. And where we get confused and lost is that we get caught up in the shadows. We get caught up in the thoughts. We get caught up in the stories. And we forget about the fact that behind all the stories is this pure light of awareness and this energy of life that we're all a part of. That not only is there nothing wrong with, there could never be anything wrong with it. Tell me what you hear.
I don't quite know how to respond.
Then here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Can you stay with me over the break?
Absolutely.
Okay. Over the break, I just want you to sit with that as quietly as you can and just let whatever comes up come up, and we're going to talk about it when we come back, okay?
Okay.
All right. Mercedes in Mexico, you are next in the queue. If you want to get in the second half of the show, the number's to call 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. You like what we're doing here? Check us out online at supercoach.com. Follow me on Twitter at @Michael_Neal. We're going to be back with more of your calls and more thoughts on being addicted to success right after this break.
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about being addicted to success, and we're talking about having what you want and thriving in every area of your life. And I've just got to say, when I grow up, I want to sound like David G. That guy's voice just sounds amazing. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go back to Deirdre. Deirdre, what came up for you as you kind of just thought about what we'd been talking about? What came up for you over the break?
Not a lot. I think the what I got from it was that, you know, at the deeper level, I'm still who I am. Nothing really has changed about that, and that, you know, maybe this is just external circumstances that I'll get past. And it seems hopeless now, but it really isn't. And maybe I do have the resources to get past it.
Look, if that's all you heard, that would be great. But let me. There are times where I have a really good week in terms of success. And I've got all the dopamine and serotonin that my little brain could ever want. And I start thinking, man, this is amazing. You know, if I really applied myself, I could sort out the Middle East and cure cancer and still be home in time to, you know, cook waffles for the kids. And then I kind of calm down and I reflect on how actually miraculous it is that I'm even alive. Like, how many things had to go right for a man to find a woman and a sperm to find an egg and me to find people and navigate the world successfully in terms of being alive for the past 40 years. Like, that's one of those things that's easy to take for granted. And what occurs to me in those moments is how wonderful it is not to be in charge of the universe. And how grateful I am that there's something, and I don't claim to know what it is, but there's some kind of an implicate order behind life. There's some sort of energy and intelligence behind life that makes our being here possible. And when I'm in touch with that, you know, there in the Jewish religion at Passover, they have a prayer called Dayenu, which means that would have been enough. And it's, you know, if this was all there was, that would have been enough. But we got this. And if this had been all there was, that would be enough. And when I can get into that kind of place, you know, the fact that I'm alive, you know, if that was all there was, that would be enough. But I'm alive and I can experience stuff. And if that was all there was, that would be enough. But I'm alive and I can experience stuff and I can think. And if that was all I had, that would be enough. But I've also got people. And if that was all I had, that would be enough. When I can get into that place, I'm not addicted to success and I'm not addicted to winning and I'm not addicted to anything, because just the privilege of being alive in this moment is enough for this moment. And you know what? I'd love to have more of those moments, but I also know that chasing them just chases them further away. So what I know to do, and this is just me, is I live my life as best as I know how to do, and I have fun, and I try to be a good person, and I try to make a positive difference, and most days I think I do a pretty good job, and some days I don't. But all in all, it works, and it's pretty cool to me that I get to do it again today. There's a beautiful Marianne Williamson quote. And she says, when we surrender to God, we surrender to something bigger than ourselves, to a universe that knows what it's doing. When we stop trying to control events, they fall into a natural order, an order that works. We're at rest while a power much greater than our own takes over, and it does a much better job than we could have done. We learn to trust that the power that holds galaxies together can handle the circumstances of our relatively little lives. Does that have any resonance for you?
Yeah, it does.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you for phoning in, Deirdre.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. You know, and I don't know. I think I probably do have a tendency to try too hard to help people to get it. But it's not about getting it in the sense of, well, I guess it's not really up to me. I guess I better be grateful. Mustn't grumble, you know. At least I'm breathing. It's not about settling. It's about recognizing, like I sometimes get, you know, and I get kind of excited about the fact that if I drop a pen, it falls to the ground. Like, I know that we're supposed to take that for granted, but think about it. I mean, it's really cool. Okay. I got a pen, right? Okay. Watch this. I'm going to open my hand. It fell to my desk. That's so cool. Watch it again. It's going to do it again. Oh my God. That's so cool. Like, gravity is awesome. We don't experience it that way. We probably couldn't. We probably wouldn't function if we had to be as amazed as we could be by things that are just a part of life. But sometimes, and especially when we're getting really caught up in our story, sometimes, just sometimes, being able to go back to the simplicity of the miracle of being alive makes all the difference in the world. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Mercedes in Mexico. Mercedes, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Oh, hi, Michael.
Hello.
How are you?
I am well.
Okay. I'm really scared. I didn't expect to get on, but thank you for taking my call.
I love inducing terror in random strangers. Let's go for it.
Thank you. I originally just got caught up with your whole dopamine serotonin thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to real quick background. I'm going through some things that are really positive. Thank goodness for unemployment and layoffs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, for the first time in my life, I'm really taking my time and looking for work. I'm working with a friend who has a nonprofit, and as well, I'm really incorporating Hay House products and a lot of different things. I'm able to listen online now and picking out people and things that I'm drawn to and implementing them in my life. What I'd like to know, when you were talking about being amazed at having a pen drop and the mechanics of it, right now I know that even in all the lessons I'm learning about just letting go and letting the right things come in and taking steps and learning from mistakes, how... is there anything that you can offer me in terms of some practical suggestions on how to know? I think of it as like I'm a meerkat. Oh, my God, everything is great. I'm going to go over here. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. Wow, life is cool. Oh, my God, look at what I've done. Look at the havoc I've wreaked. I'm tired. I just want to rest. And a lot of my addiction to success has really been not addiction to success, but addiction to fulfilling those voices, childhood voices in my head saying, you're weird, Mercedes, you're crazy. Why can't you just be like other people? So right now I'm just being myself after 55 years on this earth, and I like where I'm going. I like what I'm doing. I am willing to grow and learn and change. How do I balance those two levels? Because I'm either totally bouncing off the walls with all this exciting new things that I'm learning, and then I'm just tired and don't want any more input.
I guess my question listening to that is that something to balance, or did you just describe the balance?
Maybe I'd like to know... aside from what I'm doing, I'm self-reflecting, I'm following, I'm healing my life, knowing when there's resistance. I guess it's, and all that takes time as well. And
okay.
I have time.
Okay, so here's what I hear.
Yeah. Maybe it's how to do the balance.
Well, but that's what I hear,
oh.
Is that you've got it down as a doing.
Okay.
As if it's something that you're supposed to do.
Okay.
Look, you want to get good at knitting, you're going to have to do some knitting.
Right.
You want to get good at, playing tennis. You're going to have to put some time in practicing tennis. But you want to experience more calm and peace and well-being in your life.
Right.
All you have to do is recognize where calm and peace and well-being come from. And that's that they're your nature. You were born calm and peaceful and well.
Yes, that's true.
And what takes you away from it is all the doing.
Do less and...
Well, you know, I love the phrase "do less" because that's the way
that's
a doer
doing.
Would put it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's kind of like we're doing less and it's really not doing. I know. It's don't be a human doing, be a human being.
Yeah, and you are one anyways.
Yeah.
So it's really not, even there, it's not about changing anything. It's okay. Just to the extent that you stop running around long enough to look, you'll see that you're already where you need to be.
And I know I am.
Yeah. I hear that.
I just got hooked on the word, wow, dopamine and serotonin. Maybe there's something else some more insight that you can give me. I know
sure.
I'm doing what I need. I'm in the right place. Things are happening the way they're supposed to happen, and I have no fear. I mean, I'm in a place that I never would have been years ago, because whenever there was an uncomfortable situation at work, in life, in psychoanalyze, anything, I would run. And I'm not running. I'm just letting it happen. And that's very different. First time I've ever done that.
So. Yeah. And I think, you know, the more you relax into that,
yeah,
the better it will continue to work.
That's what I thought. I mean, meerkats do need to sleep.
Even meerkats need to sleep. Thanks,
Thank
Mercedes.
Thank you, Michael, very much. Take care and have a good day.
You too. I'm going to go back to the phones in just a minute, but let me talk a little bit more about this whole addicted to success thing from a different perspective. So I've been talking about the chemistry of it. Let's talk about the psychology of it. So one of the reasons we get caught up in the sense that we need to succeed is because we have this thing that it's often talked about as the ego or the self-image. And most of our problems don't come up because we want stuff. They come up because we link our self-image to our attempts to get them. So we think, well, if I score enough goals, in other words, if I reach enough of my goals, I'm a winner. And we all want to be winners. But if I don't score enough goals, or I don't score any goals at all, then I'm a loser. And most of us will do pretty much anything to not have to think of ourselves as loser, even if we've got to create miserable lives and spread misery through the lives of the people around us in order to try to win. Now, I think when I describe it that way, pretty much anyone would say, well, I don't want to do that. But so what's the solution? How do you overcome the addiction to more? Because that's what it is. It's the addiction to more psychologically. If I have more, then I'm better. And that addiction to more, it's crashed the financial markets. It's set us against each other pretty much in every country in the world at one point or another. What do we do about it? I mean, are we supposed to just abandon goals? Do we continue to set them but somehow not attach to them? You know, the Buddhist idea that, you know, we walk on this tightrope between the world of the formless and the form. There are actually answers to those questions. Let me share a couple of my answers to those questions. And then if I have time, I'll get back to the phones. Katie, you're next in the queue. Katie in Chicago. Here's a couple of things that we have that will make a difference. One is we have the ability to separate out projects from pipe dreams and to enjoy both of them. So here's, I want to make that distinction. There's really only two kinds of goals that are worth thinking about from what I can tell. Pipe dreams have a really bad name. And I looked it up because I've always wondered why they're called pipe dreams. And the origin of the phrase pipe dream, best I can tell, comes from the opium dens in the 19th century. You know, so people kind of getting high and dreaming stuff, but never actually leaving the opium den. But so they're the things that we think we'd like to have, but we're not ready, willing, or able to actually do anything about it, to make our lives about achieving them. And that's as opposed to a project, which is something that we're actively engaged in the process of creating. So I actually think pipe dreams are great. I think a pipe dream is like a preview of coming attractions, you know, which may or may not be coming into my life, but it's amazing how often something that I pipe dreamed about yesterday, I'm creating today or is actually in my life tomorrow. And it's almost like the pipe dreaming stage, it's like an incubator. It gives an idea some extra time to take shape, you know, in the forge of our imagination before we're ready to act on them. So if you know, that for you, losing weight or saving money or changing your job or changing your husband or whatever it is just a pipe dream, something you like thinking about, but you're not really going to do anything about for now, then you can just enjoy the thought of it. And you don't have to shame yourself about not doing anything about it because, hey, it's a pipe dream. You know it's a pipe dream, but it's an enjoyable one. And if you try to call that a goal, oh, I'm set this goal for the 15th year, I'm going to lose those 20 pounds, And you know it's not really a goal. You know you're not going to do anything to make it happen. You get the worst of both worlds. You get all of the bad feelings that come with thinking about yourself as a failure, but you don't get any of the rewards that come from engaging fully with the task at hand. So that's one thing that really kind of helps with this addiction to success. It's just know what you really are out about, what you're really up to in the world, and what you like thinking about. And don't have a problem that there's a difference between the two. And the second thing that really, 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 really makes a difference is getting a deeper understanding of the source of our well-being. And I talk about this on the show all the time, but it's because I think it is at the heart of pretty much everything that goes wrong or goes right with our pursuit of success. And there was a friend of mine, and he described the way that our thoughts seem so real that it's like living with a sleight of hand magician. Even though we know that it's just doing tricks, we fall for it again and again and again and again. And we keep thinking, oh God, that's real. Oh God, people really are out to get me. Oh gosh, I really am a loser. Oh gosh, I really can't do this. Now, I've been teaching this stuff. I've been writing about it for 20 years. And I get fooled every single day by my own thoughts. I'll get upset about something and I'll think it's because something happened. And I'll go and try and change the thing. I'll go try to change the world to make myself feel better. But at some point, and it happens a lot quicker now than it used to, I kind of come back to myself. I regain my bearings. And I realize that it's just my own thinking that was upsetting me. And in fact, that's one of the most reliable ways to know that you've fallen back into the outside-in world, into the hypnotic trance of the world that says, I will make you happy if and when you do what I tell you. And you know, it sometimes goes, oh, well, yes, I understand that a lot of unhappiness is in your head, but I've got a very good reason for my unhappiness. Look, the more, simple rule of thumb, right? The more it looks like the source of your well-being or your misery is outside you, the deeper the trance you're in. Now the good news. There was some good news. It doesn't matter how deeply into trance you are. Waking up is never more than one thought away. And that new thought, which is really an absence of thought, like if you ever watch The Matrix, it's like a glitch in The Matrix. You just suddenly go, wait a minute. That can happen in any moment. And the moment that it does, you're right back into the sea of well-being. You're right back into your natural state that's yours, and it's always been yours from the moment you were born. It's as natural as breathing out and breathing in. And the moment you see it, you're right back there. There's no work to be done. And understanding that makes it so much easier to move forward and create those things you want to create and enjoy pipe dreaming about the things that you just want to pipe dream about. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Katie in Chicago. Katie, welcome to the show. Thank you for holding. What can I do for you today?
Hi. I just was loving your words. Those were very good things that you said about the achieving and the pipe dreams. That was a nice segue.
Thank you.
My husband is all about achieving and not much of the living and the, you know, being. And I, like your last caller, have been doing a lot of work with the stay house and, you know, just kind of coming into my own. I'm 36 years old and, you know, getting things together. But, you know, we've been married for 2 years and just working on having a baby together and, you know, had a miscarriage last summer and it all turns out for the best. And now we're kind of working towards having them, you know, getting pregnant again. But the other night, my husband, you know, mentioned, okay, what are we going to do if this doesn't work? And of course, I have been planning this adoption of, you know, I'm a physical therapist, and I think adopting would be a great way to go if we can't have kids. And he completely shut down to it. You know, there's still a huge chance that we could get pregnant and have, you know, many healthy kids. But so I guess the question was kind of around how do I, you know, I just found it really selfish. He's like, well, if we can't have kids, we'll, you know, we'll travel the world or things like that. And, you know, we have talked about that as one of the options, but the more I've thought about it, the more I've been, you know, into wanting to share my life with a child.
Can I ask you a weird question?
Sure.
Have you ever changed your mind?
Have I changed my mind? I change my mind on a very regular basis.
Okay. And I'm not...
Something is going on. My fire alarm. I don't know what is going on.
That was very exciting. I was hoping it was an alien attack because I've been trying to get proof and that was going to be it. But if it was just a fire alarm, I guess we'll just have to keep talking.
No. I don't know what is going on with this. I was just about to hang up and call my husband. Something's going on here.
Well, that's okay. That's fine. If you can, just stay with us for a minute. And do you think most people have the experience? Like, if we polled our listeners, do you think we'd get of the 20,000 people or so? And I'm making that up, but you know who are listening. You know, do you think how what percentage of those people would say that at some point in their life they've changed their mind?
Probably all of them, unless you asked my husband.
Right. So do you really think that your husband is the one freak of nature on this planet Earth who's never changed his mind?
You've not met my husband, but
I've not met him. No, and I mean, look, if he's got anything to do with those alien sounds in the background, I mean,
yes, that's true. So.
And the only reason I say this is because it's not a real problem.
Okay.
In other words, here's what I heard. Mm-hmm. I'm worried because there may come a point in the future where if both my husband and I feel exactly the way that we say that we feel now, there would be a conflict.
Right.
That you can't do anything about that because it's completely made up.
Absolutely. Perfect. Just what I needed to hear. Yeah.
All right.
There's so much worry. Who was it, Mark Twain, that said, I've had, you know, millions of worries, none of which actually ever happened.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I think it's some of which actually happened, but, you know, it's still a smaller percentage.
Okay. I don't know what it is, but thank you very much for your help.
Oh, you're very welcome, Katie. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. I mean, you know, if I was going to simplify this, and I'm always sort of looking at ways of making things, as Einstein said, as simple as possible, but not simpler. We all lose our way from time to time. We lose our bearings. We get caught up in our own thoughts and worries and nightmares. And when we do, we default to whatever habit of thinking we grew up with. If we grew up around people who got angry, we get angry. If we grew up around people who get neurotic, we get neurotic. If we grew up around people who get aggressive, we get aggressive. If we grew up around people who got scared, we get scared. But essentially, we're just doing what we learn to do when we don't know what to do. And then we regain our bearings. We find our way. We drop out of all that thinking and back into our common sense, our deeper intelligence, our deeper wisdom. And from that place, we know what to do, or we know that there's nothing to do. Or if we don't know what to do, we wait because we know we will know what to do. And in a way, you can solve any problem that you've got just by being aware that if it seems like a really big problem, it's just because you've lost your way. And the moment you regain your bearings, the moment you relax into yourself, you reconnect with that bit of you that knows that, you know what, whatever happens, it's going to be okay. If it still looks like there's anything to be done, you'll just do it. I had a dream once and I was put in charge of a really large university and it was really exciting and I was really powerful and cool and stuff. And in my dream, like after months of trying to balance all the needs of all the students and the teachers and the parents and the boosters and all the people pushing their own agenda without any awareness or sensitivity to the flow of the whole system, it was a real relief to wake up. And it's a real relief when you realize you do not have to control everything that happens in your life. If you just connect to that best place inside yourself and you hang out there as best you can, as much as you can, you will find your way and you will navigate your life with ease and grace and you will begin to thrive. I hope you've enjoyed the show. We're going to be back with another live one next week. You can learn more about us online at supercoach.com. Follow me on Twitter at Michael_Neal. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.